Welcome into Redacted on this Tuesday. So glad to see you here. The internet has been failing all day. There's been all sorts of hay fever going on, but we've got a jam-packed show for you on this Tuesday. There was a major UFO whistleblower event in Washington, D.C. yesterday. I think it was a major, really a historic day. The press conference was about 4 hours long or close to 4 hours long. We're going to go through a lot of it for you, save you the time as we've gone through all of it. There are some major revelations that have come out of this. Congress now, of course, asking for answers in all of this, and we'll get this testimony directly from these whistleblowers. These are high-level members of the military. Many of these people who have had their lives ruined as a result of what people have done to them as a result of it, being forced to sign non-disclosure agreements for
the
stuff that they've seen.
You're giving the whole story.
I know, this is
supposed to be a tease.
Okay.
We are going to get to that. We also are going to tell you about the United States sending depleted uranium to Ukraine, something we have been predicting for a long time, and now the Wall Street Journal pretending they have an exclusive about it. We are also going to tell you about climate change as it results to war, because, you know, the mainstream media is willing to sort of follow around these little climate change stories that, you know, are clickable and fun and totally ignore the impact of on the climate of war. That plus the White House Pride event and how one person actually did get banned for inappropriate behavior. Shocker. We're going to tell you all that and more as Redacted starts right now.
All right. Welcome in, everyone. So we've got a very busy show for you. As I mentioned, like half the internet is down. It's amazing to me that Amazon Web Services, which runs almost the entire internet, in fact, it runs the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, the CIA is run by Amazon Web Services.
Okay. They need a redundancy.
That's right.
I would say we're having to sort of put our, you know, certain programs we rely on do use this service and others we don't. So we're putting things together, as my grandma would say, with spit and glue.
Yeah, like we use Kraft. Kraft is all of our show notes and our archives. So we use Kraft for a lot of our back end. Kraft runs on Amazon Web Services. So our entire show notes, all of the notes and research from today's show, basically held where some of us can load it, some of us can't. What else is down? Parsec is down, which allows our remote team to connect to our computer. So we've had to do a whole workaround here. So it's crazy. Half the internet is down. But I should mention Amazon.com is running. So it's amazing. Amazon Web Services is totally down, but Amazon.com is still running. How does that work? What are they running it on?
I don't know.
Google?
They run it on Google Web Services?
They don't
run
priority.
It on crappy Amazon servers, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Before we move into the stories we're about to talk about, we want to tell you about our newsletter, because that is still up and running. You can find it at redacted.inc. And it comes to you every morning, Monday through Thursday, which is the same days we do this show. And it covers a lot of the same stories we're going to cover today. I like for it to be for you sort of a reference guide, because a lot of times we get asked for links to the things we're talking about. Because you are all studious learners like we are, and we appreciate that. And when people say, where can I read this for myself to come up with my own opinion? I love it. The newsletter is a great place for that. Plus, we have other kind of fun tidbits, other smaller stories. We can't get to them all. So we usually cover 4 or 5 stories in our live show, but the newsletter has a lot more. And I think you'll enjoy it. It's free, totally free. Redacted.inc.
Redacted.inc. All right, let's talk about this big UFO event in Washington, D.C. We're going to highlight and document the historic day in Washington, D.C., where multiple UFO whistleblowers came forward to share their story at the press club. Dr. Stephen Greer, his Disclosure Project, of course, you'll remember many moons ago, over a decade ago, he held one of these events before, and he kind of started off by explaining that the world kind of wasn't ready for that press conference at the time. Members of Congress and so forth weren't really ready for the disclosure, and the people that came forward, those testimonies that came forward that day at that event. So this whole event took over 3 hours, close to 4 hours, with jaw-dropping moments. I mean, bombshell moments. I want to show you a number of those moments now, and I'm going to save the most amazing, what I believe is the most amazing, for the end. So you got to stick around for this. So anyway, Dr. Greer started off by explaining that they know these are the things they've turned over to Congress, Senate, and the White House for part of this testimony. Here's the list of things that they sent out, which is the Disclosure Project slide, Project Intelligence Archive, and contains government documents from the United States, Canada, Australia, Russia, the UK, and more, 145 top secret bases, 752 witnesses from military corporate government solutions, files with witness testimony and some video with supporting documents and information, 121 UF crash retrieval cases. Some documents includes name of witness, et cetera, et cetera. So he went through all of this, explaining that this is the stuff they were handing over. Here is Dr. Stephen Greer, though, showing the map locations of these secret bases in the United States. Look at the number of secret military bases inside the United States and what's being worked on at these secret military bases from witnesses who've come forward and have actually worked at these bases. Watch.
Operations have happened. I'm saying illegal because we can prove that this information, as Senator Inouye said, you'll hear his statement in a moment, has been run by a very shadowy, deep black operation. And we're not talking the legal black budget of the United States. We're talking about projects that presidents and CIA directors and secretaries of defense and members of the Congress who have a need to know and are cleared TSSCI in SCIFs, secure compartmented information facilities, have been blatantly either gaslit, denied access. That is the foundation of everything we've done, is that these projects are a priori illegal and therefore unconstitutional and have to be reined in, because not doing so is a threat to the national security. So here is your list. I'm not going to go through 145 sites. Some of them are black sites. Some of them are bases you know about, like Wright-Patterson, Edwards, Nellis, Area 51, so-called. But all of them are based on witness testimony and intelligence we've gathered over the last 30 years. And it's time for it to be disclosed.
Here is Dr. Stephen Greer.
Can I just push you on this map that he has with all the red dots? These are bases that are actively working on UFO projects. These are not just sightings, right?
Because these are military bases. Many of them we know, right? Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, okay. Edwards Air Force, but many of them on this map are black sites that we don't know about. So that was included in this map. And he also showed around the world. So these are not just United States military bases. These are black sites in other parts of the world.
In other countries, because he mentions Russia. Mm-hmm. But then when you look at the map, I'm just playing it back. There's no bases in Africa at all. None in the Middle East.
That we know of.
One in Pakistan.
That we know of.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm just curious about.
So I don't know all of them, but these are the ones that they have actual human beings who've confirmed this, have, you know, shown them documents, videos, security badges for these black sites, all sorts of testimony. And by the way, these people have then gone to Congress and submitted their testimony to Congress, which you can go to prison for lying to Congress. Like, you don't just do that if you don't actually have some facts to back that up. These whistleblowers who've come forward, and the reason they've come forward is because the whistleblower protection laws, they were silenced before that, before the whistleblower protection laws. That's why they're now able to come forward. So Greer makes the point that alien craft, so the first of many reasons here, the whistleblowers haven't come forward before is because in many cases, their lives were threatened. They were told they would be killed if they came forward on the stuff that they saw. They're worried about their family's protection. They're worried about losing their pensions. Many of them signed 80-year non-disclosure agreements, 80-year non-disclosure agreements to keep quiet about it. Greer makes the point that the alien craft we have are not the issue. It's the deep state, the off-the-books operations that is running all of this. They have their own versions of these craft. They're carrying this out. And the White House is kept out of it. Congress has been kept out of it and in the dark about it. And you're starting to hear more of this because now Congress is demanding answers, because they're noticing and found out that a lot of these projects are black book. They're not on the money that they approved, and they're demanding answers about it. Good for them. Here's what Stephen Greer says about that.
But this object was retrieved because it became disabled, Some of these retrieval operations are not extraterrestrial, but they would like sometimes the public to think maybe it was, because the bigger secret, I'll tell you right now, is not the extraterrestrial issue. It's these technologies, which an unsupervised and frankly illegal operation have, which is a threat to the national security, period. This we will prove. And this is a bigger threat, the existence of these in the hands of unsupervised operations that have escaped the oversight of the president of the office of the president and the Congress for since 1956 to 1960.
And so he then explains the difference between the man-made craft and the ones of extraterrestrial origin, which we've been reverse engineering for years, since the 1940s. And he shows the man-made side by side. So it's important to understand, yes, there are the alien craft that we have. We know that. That's without a doubt. But then we're also been reverse engineering them, and they look close, but not totally like them. So here he gives an example of the differences here.
If I had time, I would run through. We can go through very quickly. I think people in the military and in Congress and the American people need to know the difference between the man-made advanced technologies and how they look and the extraterrestrial vehicles. We're going to run through a side-by-side. You can look and see ET, one on the left, seamless. It is actually created in a material science and technology we don't have time to go into, but we understand that, versus the man-made ones that have components, parts, wires, and what have you. Next. And again. Next. And again. And then you hear on the right, that is the Norton Air Force Base, 1988 air show, classified. We have a witness who was in there. And these on the right are man-made. They were late Mercury era, 59 through early 60s in their construction, because we had mastered gravity control in October 1954.
So he goes on from there. Now, one of the most explosive whistleblowers is a member of the military, United States Marine. They're decorated United States Marine. U.S. Marine assigned to the Philippines. The platoon of six men discovered a UFO. They came across it after the tsunami and subsequent earthquake, earthquake and then subsequent tsunami in the Philippines and Indonesia. It was being used in some kind of human trafficking operation. And this is where this story is gets crazy. This craft was likely a man-made reverse engineer craft, off the books craft. And this is a stunning story. Even the Daily Mail confirmed this story yesterday. Exclusive, Marine vet breaks 14-year silence to make astonishing claim that his six-man unit saw a hovering octagonal UFO being loaded with weapons by unmarked U.S. forces who threatened them at gunpoint while serving in Indonesia in 2009. So the Marine is Michael Herrera, and he came forward yesterday for the first time and told us this story. Listen.
Thank you all for being here. What I'm about to tell you hasn't been something that I've disclosed until recently in the help of Dr. Greer, among other people, so I appreciate your help with this. In 2009, my unit, which was the most decorated infantry battalion in the entire Marine Corps, which was 2nd Battalion, 5th Marines, was called in to do humanitarian assistance operations out in the Philippines, which was Operation Kitsana. And we flew to the southwestern part of the city, which is Padang. Looked a lot different through satellite imagery that I've recently seen. Back then is a lot different, especially because most of it was decimated, on fire, rubble, flooded, you name it, basically the worst kind of scenario you could ever see. We trekked up about 300 meters. When we got to this high point, I was taking video camera, and I had actually turned to the north, which just kind of slopes down. And right there was something that stuck out like a sore thumb, especially with jungle terrain, things like that, vegetation, very green stuff, was something that stuck out so well. It's always going to be basically imprisoned in my mind for the rest of my life, and it has been for 14 years, was something that was rotating, and it was transitioning between colors like a light matte gray as well as a dark matte black. You can see that the craft here actually had was roughly about 300 feet. And the reason why I know this is because you could fit three of the helicopters that we flew in on underneath this craft. And it had an audible hum to it, kind of like a guitar amp if you were to unplug that, or like a transformer. It's very audible. If I was to hear that sound again, I could tell you, okay, it's probably this thing or something similar to that. It's very distinct. And the way that it was floating, which was about 10, 15, 20 feet off the ground, it was kind of a very eerie thing to see because I've never seen anything like that in my life. When we got up to that point, we were then intercepted by a team of soldiers or rogue military force, if you will. The most concerning thing about this is they all had American dialects. They had American gear. They had OTVs, black. They had black camouflage. They had very similar setups to what we had, but more high speed, something what you would see special operation groups these days have. They had no insignias on. They had no ranks. They had nothing that would signify who they were. They had black ball caps. They had M4A4s that were equipped with ACOGs, which was a step up from what we were currently issued, as well as PEC-16 IR illumination devices that you use for night vision and night patrols, things like that. So we were engaged. We had eight of them put the drop on us. You could audibly hear them flow the safety selectors off. They basically started screaming at us, telling us what we were doing. We were not allowed to be there. Who were we with? What were we doing there? Threatened that they could kill us right then and there. We could get lost in the jungle. They could throw us out of a helicopter if they needed to. It was very nerve-wracking at that point, especially looking to my fellow Marines and seeing the reactions on their faces, too. We were all freaking scared. At that time, there was four of these trucks, which were F-350s. They were up-armored. They were pretty beefy. They had weapon cases that I've seen before because of something that we've actually loaded weapons into. They had two of them that were in the back of each truck. They also had these containers that was illustrated right here, which come to find out through recent revelations from yesterday from somebody who came forward to Dr. Greer. I don't know who they are, but what they had told him and what he has told me is that this gentleman knows exactly what these were used for because they had like a cylinder on the front, which is either for oxygen or what I hypothesized was for vacuum sealing, which lead me to suspect that they were smuggling narcotics or drugs. Come to find out it's more disturbing than that. This gentleman has firsthand account with this and says that it was for people. It's very disheartening, especially because that part of the world have already gotten ravaged. And it's something that is very hard to see right now because of what I've witnessed. And it's very disheartening. And this is why I'm up here.
So human trafficking. So using these craft has nothing to do with aliens. These are reverse engineered from that technology. And these off-the-books people are using this for human trafficking purposes. That's what he saw with his fellow Marines, whose lives were then threatened. He also goes on to explain how he filmed it that day. He filmed it. He went back to the base.
Okay. Why don't we get to see that?
I'm telling you. And he had the six of the Marines that were there that day all had their cameras and phones taken from them when they got back. He had it in his locker, in his foot locker, with stuff on top of it. And you can watch the full video of this. I had to clip it down. He speaks for 20 minutes. We could be here all night. He clipped it. They took his memory card out. And they took his battery from his camera. So they removed his memory card, took it, and they left it there on top, empty. And so did the other five Marines that also were there that day. None of the other Marines in that group had anything taken from them or manipulated. It was the six who were there that day that saw that craft.
Yeah.
So So that's that. And then he was told a few days later, in early December, he was back at Camp Hansen in Okinawa, Japan. He was told to report to the office, and where he found an Air Force lieutenant in full uniform, but no name tag. And he wouldn't tell him his name. And he starts telling me, you're allowed to talk about what happened. You're not allowed to talk about what happened, not to your chain of command, not even a general, he says to Herrera. You will go to prison or you will die. And he forces him to sign a non-disclosure agreement. And here's what he says about that.
And I have not spoken about it ever since I was able to recently because what the law passed. But that is my account for you guys. This is also an urging for anybody in Washington, D.C. who's a political figure. Please get this under control because there are people who are either being hurt or killed by this. And it's something that needs to be addressed. Please.
So he specifically was talking about the human trafficking piece of this and them using this technology for all sorts of nefarious reasons that are totally off the books. And mm-hmm. These people, these black operators, he's a U.S. Marine and they're taking his weapons away from him. They're and they're roughing him up. Then he has to sign a non-disclosure agreement mm-hmm. as a result of it. Who are these people?
How can he talk now then? Whistleblower protection?
Whistleblower protection. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So and he's come forward on that. Next up is Army veteran Digna, Stephen Digna. Now, he worked in Death Valley at the live fire facility, and he ended up suffering a brain injury as a result of an explosion. So he started off his testimony by apologizing. He said, I suffered a brain injury due to an explosion at the live fire facility. And so he's like, I need to take things slowly and I need to read off of my notes. So he apologized for that at the beginning of this. He was there that day when a Raytheon craft that he wasn't supposed to see arrived while he was there. Watch his testimony. This is Stephen Digna.
My name is Stephen Michael Digna Jr. The following testimony is true and inaccurate as it can be at this time to the best of my ability, and I am prepared to swear this testimony under oath before the Senate and Congress. I'm a former sergeant in the United States Army. I began active duty service in 1999, and I served until 2002. In July of 2001, I was observing a live fire practice at eye level from an observation deck at approximately 3 stories high from the desert floor. I saw a craft in the distance at approximately 200 feet off the ground, measuring approximately 172 feet across, strongly resembling a hovering B-2 Spirit. Once my eyes adjusted, I could make out the general shape of the craft. There were 2 men from Raytheon present. I pulled out my night vision goggles to get a better look. One of the 2 men on the observation deck from Raytheon noticed the night vision goggles I had. He went from chattering cheerfully. They were pretty relaxed. They'd seen these before. It wasn't abnormal to them. He looked at me with a very, very severe look of disapproval and anger that I had. At that point, they both went calmly inside, probably a little bit angry, and it felt as though I had crossed the line. I took another look with my night vision goggles. The reason this event was not reported was due to the fact that it was not unidentified. I'm going to repeat this very clearly to the cameras. This craft was not unidentified. This was on our birds, and to the observer controller that called that out on the range, I'm not going to put his call sign out. Roger up, eyes on, hands on confirmation. That's our bird, but she doesn't need wind to get lift. She was hovering stationary. I'm going to interject here. Sorry, guys. This was very dangerous. This craft showed up unscheduled. I got no notification. My job was to maintain command and control and to be the hub and top observer controller for the Tactical Operation Command Center for Live Fire Desert Warfare. That's the largest live fire warfare center for desert warfare on the planet and in history. So any moving objects that are on that desert floor or in those skies are supposed to be coordinated between myself and another group that I directly worked with the civilian personnel through Raytheon and the United States Air Force.
You know, when those guys come forward like this, and we're talking ex-military, and there's 2 guys that corroborate the same story, their lives don't become glamorous because they're whistleblowers. It actually becomes hell.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so like they're putting their lives, they're putting themselves out there in a big way and possibly ruining their reputation, but they don't care because they want to get this information out. So we have to remember that. It's not like they just all of a sudden are, it's like, hey, let's do this plan and let's go out and we'll become famous because we'll say this at the same time.
No, most whistleblowers' lives are ruined.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. You're absolutely right about that. So here's Stephen Digna, whistleblower, who's had his life ruined as a result of it. So remember, he saw this Raytheon craft. He saw the members of Raytheon at his facility that he's in charge of, and he didn't know that they were going to be doing this test flight. They didn't tell him. He's in charge of it. Then a few days later, he's on leave, and he goes with his wife. He's on leave from the base. They're going to go to the movies. And suddenly a craft appears as they're driving to the movies. They've now pinpointed the GPS location. He's turned this over to congressional testimony, and here's what happened. And he was abducted. Listen to this. If you think what we just talked about was crazy, this is even crazier.
See, was a bright light through all of my windows. And at that exact same time, my car's power steering and the engine's electrical system, everything died, completely died. When I exited the vehicle, I rushed towards the front end of the car, believing there was someone pointing a floodlight at us. I had some words to say to that man. I stepped through a thick field of white plasma that encompassed a spheroid craft. As I turned to go inspect the craft, my wife opened the door, and she ran out towards the front of the car, and she was yelling, "Steve, no." She was instantaneously locked in place in a bright white field of plasma. As I looked at her, I thought to myself, it's okay, she's in stasis lock. That plasma enveloped her body with about 6 inches. As this thud resonated my body, I felt my molecular or my cells, maybe the quantum level of my body, feel like it was being resonated. I felt like maybe I'm going to be microwaved or something to that nature. Either way, I seen some bands coming through. I began lifting up off the ground. My vehicle began lifting with me also. As this happened, my body tipped back, and I could see the underbelly of the craft. You're going to see that design right in front of you. The rectangular shape right in the center there looked like a docking socket for an electrical port, and I was staring up at the ceiling, and my vision cued into a very, very bright white light. My vision panned over, and there was my wife flat on her back on a table. It was smaller than the table I was laying on, slightly lowered, and she still had the same exact expression on her face, like she was screaming no. However, she was no longer stuck in the running position. She was flat. So after that had happened, I saw a female right next to me. She was taking some samples from me. It was a human female. She had red hair. She had very fair skin. After that moment, I also, as I panned over, I could see the window and the desert behind me. I realized we were not in space. I could see the desert floor. I could see the exact two rock formations and one far off in the distance. So this is pinpointed by GPS coordinates.
So the final whistleblower, Eric Hecker, is going to be a guest on our show. I spoke with him today. He worked for Raytheon. He's a Raytheon whistleblower. He worked at the massive military base in Antarctica at the South Pole. He was working at the South Pole station. And he explains that the base in the South Pole is actually a giant air traffic control tower that monitors all of the interstellar craft that are being operated by humans, as well as non-humans. He explains that when they first fired it up underground, because this is massive, it actually caused the well, he doesn't say specifically, but it when this happened, when they fired it up for the first time, suddenly there was a massive earthquake in New Zealand, the Christchurch earthquake. And he says he believes that it did cause this earthquake in New Zealand. Watch this.
I have already given all pertinent information and supporting documentation to the Senate Intelligence Committee and ARRO. They informed me that all of my information will be recorded for public record and shared with Congress. It is that important. In 2010, I was selected to go down to the South Pole Station in Antarctica for an entire year by Raytheon Polar Services as an employee of a third-party contractor for the National Science Foundation. I function in a dual-role capacity as a tradesman and a firefighter. My responsibilities required me to be more informed than most of my crew and offered me complete access to the facilities. What I learned from this unique experience needs to be shared with the entire world. The technology at the South Pole Station certainly can do what it is presented as its primary purposes, and unfortunately, much more. The IceCube neutrino detector is presented as a passive listening device for the purposes of the science as presented. But I'm going to skip right through the chase, folks. I have provided documentation that proves that the 5,160, what they call DOMs, that are embedded in the ice can actually transmit at 2,047 volts each. That gives us a long list of things to consider. It is effectively a multifaceted directed energy weapons platform that I will list rapidly a few things that it can do. Vehicle detection. We're learning that these off-world craft, on-world craft, ours or other nations, are also emitting neutrinos. So this makes the South Pole Station effectively an air traffic control station for this new level of equipment that nobody's discussing. In addition to the ability to detect neutrinos and the exotic vehicles, I have provided documentation that shows that this is also a system for faster than light communications. In the past, Gary McKinnon has hacked NASA, found the off-world fleet, the list of captains, and it's apparent that if we have faster-than-light vehicles moving throughout the system, we're going to need faster-than-light communications. This is that facility. Unfortunately, I have other bad news. The season that I was there, 2010 to 2011, we converted from construction to operations and maintenance in both the elevated station and the detector array. Unfortunately, when they first fired it up, That was when we had the earthquakes in Christchurch, New Zealand. There's two incidental shots before they were able to target it correctly. This is an earthquake-generating device as well. This is the weapons of war that we have to deal with now and what Raytheon's hiding. I witnessed myself a very powerful green laser shooting out of the top of this facility into the cosmos. This, I believe, is a secondary form of long-range communications and or a defense system. I am not saying that we need to be scared of anything that's out there, but please understand, the military-industrial complex is happy to invest all of your money in alleviating their fears.
And that, to me, is the bottom line, right?
Yeah.
So they're happy to take all of your billions, make you scared of something, make you scared of some nefarious, whatever, alien, fake alien invasion, and lie to you about it, when in fact we've been doing it for 80 years, 60 years, 70 years of reverse engineering these craft. And what's at really the heart of it is the military-industrial complex, and it's the deep state that wants to continue these nefarious projects. And finally, there are a ton of crimes being committed here, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. So wherever you come down on this story, it doesn't really matter. People's lives have been ruined, and massive crimes have been committed here. So they brought up the attorney who is now going to start. This is going to be amazing, actually, because if they start to bring a bevy of lawsuits against Raytheon, the United States government, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, it's going to be unbelievable to see how this stuff comes out through discovery process and what we learn as these prosecutions start to move forward. Listen to what the attorney says the crimes have been committed in this. Watch.
Just a small sample, and I know we're short for time, of the crimes that are directly related to this issue. Disclosure Project witnesses have and gathered intelligence has established the following major crimes: treason against the United States of America, murder, mass murder, torture, kidnapping and abduction, embezzlement of government funds, embezzlement of private funds, bank fraud, money laundering, illegal surveillance, insubordination and insurrection against the United States, false imprisonment, witness and whistleblower intimidation, theft of intellectual property, trespassing, burglary, framing of innocent people, government corruption, blackmail, bribery, and illegal use of the government and military property, and many, many more crimes.
So I just want to say thank you to all of you for watching this with an open mind. This is just the tip of the iceberg. Again, I'm going to have Eric Hecker on the show about the South Pole Station. I'm fascinated about this Antarctica piece. It's not like you can just get a flight to Antarctica on a regular basis. So
no,
what is Raytheon doing there? What are these defense contractors doing at the South Pole? And I want to learn more about that. I want to learn more about all of this. And I think we should all want to learn more about this and just be, you know, be open-minded about it and be very aware about the motivations of these people and who's making money off of it. That's, you know, so anyway, and we'd love to have Dr. Stephen Greer on the show. Of course, read his books. I'm sure all of you have probably read his books as well. Anyway, so those are my thoughts. That was the big UFO whistleblower press conference on yesterday. And more details to come out of all of that. And I just want to say thanks to all of you. We're hitting kind of new highs here on the show.
Yeah.
Record numbers of viewers. And that's wonderful. That's wonderful to see. And also all of the new subscribers. So thank you guys so much for having an open mind. I see somebody in the chat are like, I never knew about this. Thank you for covering it. And others are saying, you guys are crazy. And I love it. I love both sides of that. So
do you?
I do. You know me. I love a good argument. I love a good argument. Because that's how we grow as human beings, having discomfort, sitting around having a pint and talking about differences of opinions. I mean, that's how people grow, right?
Well, honey, I'm very protective of you. This is why I'm getting upset, is because I don't like the way that this is being presented, where people are like, he's nuts and she's not buying it.
But then do you see all the comments that are like, she's wrong and go Clayton. So I'm
open to everything. It's not about the content of the story. It's that I think that you are responding to people calling you crazy by engaging in a way that's not productive. I'm fine with what you're presenting here. I'm open to all of these things.
Like, hey, here's to the crazy ones, right?
The way Steve that Jobs I, said. My motivation here is to be protective of you and say, okay, just, you know.
Sometimes, yes, you're right. Sometimes I get a little too excited.
Lower your breathlessness here because you don't need to respond to people who are saying, you know, he's crazy. And, you know, you're pushing people like, you mean to tell me you don't believe? And I think you're getting a little breathless.
Because I just can't understand how, yeah.
I know. And that's why I'm just saying, okay, take it down an octave. And I'm just trying
to. I have a problem when I see a Marine come out, another sergeant come out, another Marine comes out, and all of these, and one person will jump in and say, they're all liars. It's like, okay, really? All these people who don't even know each other, they're all high members.
It's never our MO to come here and convince people of anything, but our modus operandi is usually just like, look at this stuff, see what we think, you know, we're presenting it to you. So that's why I'm just asking you to turn down the volume a little bit. And some people, you know, you take it however you want. So we don't need to get personal.
No.
Maybe we already have.
Mm-hmm. We are more than personal. Some people can't handle it. That's all right. All right. Let's move on.
Do you want to move on now, Philip? David?
Yeah, let's move on.
Anything?
We've got more news to get to.
I'm ready.
We've got more news to get to on this this Tuesday, if you can believe it. The United States has decided, hey, you know what? Sounds like a good idea. We're going to send depleted uranium shells to Ukraine to use in Abrams tanks against Russians, because nothing says love like sending radioactive ammunition to the people that you love in Ukraine so they can destroy the whole countryside that they're looking to reclaim and have cancer for the rest of their lives. That's how you send love. Next Valentine's Day, send someone you love some depleted uranium shells. We'll cover that story. But first,
we want to tell you about our show, our friends over at MedCline. Now, if you have ever experienced discomfort in your sleep, MedCline is a solution that really you should look into. See this URL right there, medcline.com/redacted. Go to their site and you'll see some of the solutions they have for certain things, such as shoulder pain or acid reflux. Or for me, I always get really stiff hips since my pregnancy. So I use this MedCline, this body pillow here, to sort of wrap my knees around because it really helps. I got used to that during pregnancy and I just now can't be without it. So this is a natural solution that can bring you real relief. The MedCline 3-component shoulder relief system. That's right. Whether you suffer from painful nighttime acid reflux, shoulder pain, or both, the MedCline patented pillow system is designed to cushion your body in a sleeping position that is supremely comfortable, doctor recommended, and clinically proven to provide effective natural acid reflux or shoulder pain for both of those things, plus a better night's sleep. In fact, 95% of patients reported an overall improvement in sleep quality when using MedCline. Now, of course, they haven't used it on this stiff hip thing that I have, but I find it, like I said, just incredibly useful for that as well. The MedCline reflux relief system is proven to reduce exposure to harmful stomach acid 87% better than a bed wedge. Sleeping on the MedCline reflux relief system may protect against the long-term health consequences of untreated nighttime reflux. MedCline's medical grade gel infused foam is built to last and provides cooling comfort and exceptional night's sleep for anyone using it. So right now you can get 20% off when you go to medcline.com/redacted. That's 20% off and a better night's sleep. So go today, look at their website, see their various solutions for your sleep problems. Again, that's medcline.com/redacted.
Well, 4 months ago here on Redacted, we broke the story that the United States had ordered depleted uranium shells for use in Abrams tanks. These are the Abrams tanks that were then to be sent off to Ukraine. So put two and two together there, right? Depleted uranium shells in Abrams tanks for use on the battlefield in Ukraine against Russian soldiers. Dan Cohen was first to bring us that story here on Redacted. But this morning, the Wall Street Journal is out with a cover story that exclusive, the Wall Street Journal has learned and confirmed that, yes, the United States is authorizing the use of depleted uranium shells to Ukraine. I guess they didn't watch Redacted 4 months ago when we had that story first. But now that it's in the Wall Street Journal, Dan, I guess it's official. They got the story 4 months after us. So what's going on here?
Yeah, well, the Wall Street Journal is calling its story an exclusive, that the reporters are breaking the story from their sources inside the U.S. government, inside the Pentagon, inside the White House. And, you know, that's the very definition of access journalism. What we did is looked at publicly available documents in the government register that showed that the United States government, that the Pentagon had ordered multiple shipments of depleted uranium shells for use specifically in Abrams tanks, first in October and then in December. And it wasn't until January 25th that the Biden administration announced that it was sending those Abrams tanks to Ukraine, and it portrayed it as the process of recent deliberations. But the fact that these were ordered in October and December, months ahead of time, suggested to me that this was actually a calculated decision that had been planned long ahead of time and was just being made public at that point. And so that's what we reported at the time. We showed the contracts, the documents that were publicly available, and the Wall Street Journal, as all other mainstream media, ignored the story completely. So we had the exclusive at that point. I collaborated with the Bulgarian journalist Diliana Gaitanjeva on the story, and she published the story in Bulgarian. Obviously, I broke it in English. And what's remarkable, Clayton, is that when Diliana published her story on Facebook, because in Bulgaria, Facebook is the main social media outlet that people use, the platform people use, Facebook actually marked her story as fake news. And she was forced to delete her post in order to not have her account suspended, even though, of course, it was entirely true. So now that the Wall Street Journal reports it, well, now it's, I guess it's not fake news anymore. So, you know, just remarkable to see how this works.
Yeah, I wonder if she'll be able to post it in Bulgaria. Here's the Wall Street Journal, and see if they'll flag it as fake news. It's amazing how this, the access journalists can turn something into, I guess it, now it's real news. It's no longer fake anymore. So I'm curious, what do you think changed here? Because this was all publicly available. The White House was denying that this was the case. Government officials were denying that this was going to happen, and yet it was all there in the documentation. What do you think changed?
Well, one of the things that I wonder is if this has to do with the stalling, sort of failing counteroffensive that the Ukrainians have supposedly launched, though has not had any real successes and has been delayed since what, into the spring. I mean, the beginning of the spring is when they were supposed to launch it. Now the media is calling it it went from spring offensive to spring summer counteroffensive. So I wonder if, well, now the U.S. saying we're going to send more weapons in order to ensure that we inflict maximum damage on Russia, but really on Ukrainian soil, to basically poison the land so that, you know, the Donbass is in the worst possible condition for when the inevitable, at some point, there's going to be an agreement. I mean, I hope it's soon, who knows when, but then it does maximum damage because, as we all know, depleted uranium leaves toxins that will fester for generations on there's all kinds of deformities on babies and birth
cancer,
defects.
Yeah, awful. Awful. Yeah.
Exactly. That will
and
be
Putin's
there for
called
multiple
this
generations.
And Putin's called this out because the British defense minister of defense was very open about it and said, yeah, we are going to be sending depleted uranium shells. And we saw them on camera. We featured that here on Redacted, showing those depleted uranium shells in Britain as part of the tank training that the British government was providing to Ukrainian tank operators. So they were there. We could see them clearly. And the defense ministry for the British government was clearly saying that they were sending them. So it seemed weird that the United States was denying that we were also sending them. But they were very public about it, and Putin called them out about it, did he not?
Yeah, he did. The Russians have made very clear that this is a red line for them. They know about what depleted uranium does. They of course, are very aware of how the United States used it in Kosovo and in Bosnia in the 1990s, in Iraq, in both invasions in 1991 and in 2003. And, of course, in Syria. The U.S. used it in Syria in 2015, despite its promises that it would not. So the Russians are very clear about what this actually means, what depleted uranium does. The Wall Street Journal article, on the other hand, is very it's mostly the thrust of the article is about how effective they are in stopping Russians. The Wall Street Journal article quotes a Rand Corporation analyst, and Rand Corporation is funded by the military, so not exactly neutral here. And this analyst says the projectile hits like a freight train. It's very long and very dense, so it puts a great deal of kinetic energy on a specific point and an enemy armor array. So not the only so, you know, this stuff is great, according to the Wall Street Journal. It only briefly mentions the environmental impact and says that it's been debated at the White House, where officials have expressed concern that sending the rounds might open Washington to criticism that it was providing a weapon that may carry health and environmental risks. And it mentions a UN environmental program report that talks about the metals chemical toxicity, that saying that it can cause skin irritation, kidney failure, and increase the risks of cancer. So the Wall Street Journal, of course, doesn't talk about any of the history of the U.S. using that, as I mentioned, in Bosnia, right. Kosovo, Syria, Iraq, or, you know, doesn't really get into any kind of details about these horrific effects that, you know, anybody can Google. Where, again, we're not going to show here because we don't want to be censored, but the images, if you just Google depleted uranium Iraq or Yugoslavia, Kosovo, it's horrible. So that is totally glossed over by the Wall Street Journal.
Well, they do make mention in this Wall Street Journal piece, top Biden administration officials say the U.S. goal is to enable Ukraine to make as much progress as possible on the battlefield. So what does that mean exactly? To reclaim land? We know that Zelensky in the past week has said Crimea is the goal, to retake Crimea, to retake former Eastern Ukraine, now Russia, the Donbas region. So you basically will have an area, the most fertile soil in the world, littered with cancer-causing agents. So is that the goal? To retake this land from ethnic Russians, destroy those people, and lay waste to the land on top of it? I would love for someone to ask that of Corinne Jean-Pierre at the White House press briefing, but that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, I would love to see what she has to say about it, or John Kirby. You know, it would be great if somebody did that. But and you know, since we reported on that depleted uranium, the Pentagon actually in May issued another tender for more depleted uranium munitions. These ones are 50 millimeter. They're called armor-piercing, fin-stabilized, discarding sabot with trace. And these are to be used in 50 millimeter XM-913 weapon systems, which is a huge gun mounted on top of the Bradley fighting vehicles that the U.S. sent to Ukraine. The U.S. sent 60 of those to Ukraine in January as part of a weapons package. So it's not just these Abrams tanks that are going to be firing depleted uranium. It's also going to be on these Bradley vehicles.
Yeah, we did hear from John Kirby at least a little bit on this. And so, and most, let me just circle back here. Most of these tanks, most of these Bradley fighting vehicles are being destroyed. So it's unclear exactly what's happening then to these shells. Are they winding up on the black market? Are they being destroyed? We've seen a whole laundry list of destruction of these Bradley fighting vehicles and other armored personnel vehicles over the past 48 hours as this counteroffensive has unfolded. John Kirby, though, said this kind of ammunition is fairly commonplace, he says. And it really just kind of downplays any of the studies about radioactivity and radioactive threat. It's like, it's fairly commonplace. Commonplace? No, these are not commonplace weapons.
Yeah, it's incredible. The that's There's no pushback clearly from these reporters on John Kirby's comments. I mean, this is where it comes down to somebody going to one of these press conferences and holding them to it and asking them about the history of this use and pushing back against this whitewash and not allowing it to happen. But, you know, the White House press corps, same that go to the Pentagon briefings, they're all, you know, mouthpieces for, they have working relationships. These are the very access journalists that produce these kind of reports. And, you know, basically don't credit the journalists who break the story and then pretend it's their own.
Also, they make mention of these cluster munitions and whether or not to supply cluster munitions to Ukraine. This seemed like a red line for a lot of people. Like, how are you going to do this? The indiscriminate killing of civilians with cluster munitions. There's a lot of collateral damage with cluster munitions. And there appears to be sort of an open debate in this Wall Street Journal piece about should we or shouldn't we? We're not really sure about where we stand on sending cluster munitions to Ukraine on top of all of this. And what's next?
Right.
Nukes?
Right. And cluster, I mean, that was actually recently proposed, sending so-called tactical nuclear weapons to Ukraine. And then, you know, of course, there's, when you open Pandora's box with nuclear weapons, of course, you know where that leads. I mean, many people have said there's no such thing as tactical nuclear weapons, like for small use on the battlefield. I mean, once that cat is out of the bag, then all bets are off. And then you have, you know, a possible full-on exchange of nuclear weapons. But cluster munitions are extremely dangerous. I mean, those are horrible for civilians. They spread all kinds of tiny explosives all over the place that, you know, are apparently very effective at killing a lot of soldiers at one time. But the ones that don't explode that are left there, well, those, you know, kids playing in the area, any civilians around in the area who might come across them can be injured or killed if those explode. So again, it's just destruction, poisoning of the land, and the civilian population pays the price. And the U.S. is supposedly protecting Ukraine against this Russian invasion, but is doing everything possible to sacrifice Ukraine and poison the land with depleted uranium. And maybe we're even going to see these cluster munitions.
Well, I'm sure glad that the Wall Street Journal broke this story. It's a great reporting from the Wall Street Journal. Once again,
yeah, I said something on Twitter to those guys. I responded to the Wall Street Journal and tagged the journalists, Michael Gordon and let me get the name of the other one.
Gordon Lubold
at the Wall Street
Journal. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see if, you know, was an honest mistake or are they just going to ignore it and pretend that the story was actually an exclusive. We'll have to see.
We'll see if they issue a correction. I would love to see that. Dan Cohen, thank you so much. A reminder to all of you, the first person and the first team to bring you this story on these depleted uranium shells. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Clayton.
It's crazy. We saw that story this morning. I'm like, really? Wall Street Journal?
Yeah.
Exclusive? U.S. sending depleted uranium shells? Wow. Where have I heard that before? Oh, yeah. I heard it 4 months ago on my show. Right. Anyway, we've got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. And we're going to talk about climate change and the war, why it's okay to criticize, like carbon emissions, but totally ignoring the biggest carbon emitter, the biggest environmental catastrophizing group in the world, which is the United States military launching wars around the world. We can ignore all of that. Also, the White House had a pride parade and had some friends that showed up topless on the White House lawn. I guess that's acceptable now. So we'll talk about all of that. But first, I should mention we have if you subscribe, please subscribe to the show. We've got a record number of new subscribers to tonight's show. So thank you guys so much. We're almost at 2 million subscribers. So just hit that subscribe button. And also on Rumble, we are live on Rumble as well. Go ahead and hit the follow button over there. It's totally free. You don't have to pay anything to subscribe. Yes.
Do you have this paused for any reason? Do you want to?
What's that?
Oh, okay. You have this paused. I wondered if you wanted to address anything in the chat or no?
Oh, no.
We're moving on?
I didn't.
Okay. All right. We're moving on. Well, let's talk about climate change and war, because last week when the Kakova Dam exploded, climate activist Greta Thunberg took to Twitter to call this an ecocide. Here's her tweet about this. She mistakenly blamed Russia for it, but let's give her the benefit of the doubt and say her intentions were good. What she is highlighting here is an uncomfortable fact, is that, yes, there is a climate impact to war. Because of this dam explosion, there will be plenty of farms that will be flooded, people who will not have food, sources in Crimea that depend on this water will not get it anymore. But here's the uncomfortable fact, is that you cannot condone war and then also turn around and lecture about climate change. You just simply can't have it both ways. You can't lecture consumers about driving gas-powered cars or using plastic and then also support Lockheed and Raytheon, right? Do you think Greta Thunberg spoke out about this just today? The Wall Street Journal reports that the Biden administration is expected to provide Ukraine with depleted uranium rounds. The UK also admitted to doing this recently. We've reported this often and for a long time now. Well, now we know we were right. We hate to say I told you so, but Clayton can. Do you want to say I told you so?
Yeah, I told you so.
Okay.
We had this story 4 months ago. We had it. We told you so.
I won't say it. I'll let you do it. A senior administration official told the Wall Street Journal there appear to be no major obstacles to providing depleted uranium, although the Wall Street Journal gives this sort of perfunctory, I guess, paragraph saying the proposal has been debated at the White House, where some officials have expressed concern that sending the rounds might open Washington to criticism that it was providing a weapon that may carry health and environmental risks. Maybe, right? There is some adults in the room who have this concern, but I guess they've been overruled. And so this is the question. What is the lingering effects of raging war on the environments? Well, here is one example. Just today, Chinese researchers published a study in the Chinese language journal Environmental Chemistry showing that radioactive pollutants from the U.S. Pacific Proving Ground tests were carried out in the ocean currents and moved 5,000 kilometers or 3,000 miles and spread throughout the South China Sea. So they continue to find this radiation years and years later, moved far off the target when they were being tested. This is consistent with previous research, found that these pollutants were throughout this area. Here's according to the South China Morning Post that the U.S. conducted 67 nuclear tests at the PPG in the Marshall Islands between 1946 and 1958, yielding a total of 210 megatons of TNT, setting off the equivalent of more than two Hiroshima-sized bombs every 2 days, according to some estimates. Some environmentalists say that China should join other nations in the region to seek compensation for this. In 1986, the U.S. did commit $2 billion to pay to the people of the Marshall Islands alone because of these negative consequences. Do you want to talk about that at all? Some of these tests that left these people with lingering bouts of cancer and all manner of health problems.
Yeah, I mean, we actively knew that the people, the natives that lived there near in the Marshall Islands and Bikini Atoll. I mean, just look up the stories about Bikini Atoll. Like, yeah, there's a native population. Let's just launch and test nuclear weapons here. We'll see how that winds up on
these
people.
How that goes.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
It did not go well for them. $2 billion in 1986 seemed fine, right? But it does not take into account this 5,000-mile radius that seems to be continuing to suffer from the fallout of this. It's worth noting that the U.S. is the only country that's ever used any nuclear weapons. And now U.S. leaders are urging the U.S. to support Ukraine doing the same thing, which it would essentially be the U.S. and NATO again using nuclear weapons, even though we now know that there is a lingering effect of these things, such as this article today from a think tank suggesting that Biden should authorize nuclear weapons so that Russia doesn't use nuclear weapons. It's a truly circular argument and one of the dumbest things I've read in a long time. He admits that Ukraine has been blowing up bridges and repeats the lie about Ukraine blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline, says all this is evidence that Putin is getting edgy, so the U.S. should threaten nukes so Russia doesn't use nukes again. There's no again in that sentence for Russia. It's the U.S. that would be using nukes again because it's the U.S. that has done it. So the West
isn't there like a big isn't there a big treaty that prevents countries from proliferating nuclear weapons around the world?
Like, yes.
I'm pretty sure I remembered hearing something about that.
Yeah, but I guess what they're saying is the U.S. should issue itself a permission slip to do different things, right? Which I suppose it did the first time around.
Right. Yeah, and so I just want to kind of circle back. Yes, they did try to do an evacuation of the Bikini Islands and Marshall Islands, but then they sent them back. So there was all sorts of residual radiation as a result of it. So great, they weren't there for the blast, which was like five or 10 times worse than what was at Hiroshima. But then they just went back home afterwards. They sent them back. It's not like their land was unusable.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, thanks for what you did. Thank you for taking me away for a little while on a vacation and then sending me back to my radioactive home. Thank you.
Right. And so I think it's worth noting because we're, you know, today I'm going to show you some other climate stories like Greta Thunberg and these kids who are suing the state of Montana, I believe. You know, all this like big talk about climate change. And then we just sort of ignore this idea of like truly wrecking the earth with nuclear weapons. Right. I guess because the West has shown it doesn't really care who dies in the conflict in Ukraine. Most of us maybe don't know who's being killed. We just like think, oh, yes, support Ukraine. I can change my profile to a Ukrainian flag and that's all I have to do. And scream about supporting Ukraine means that you're supporting Ukraine taking control of a region that asked Russia to help them stop being bombed by Ukraine, voted to join Russia. And now Ukraine is sending soldiers in there to die to take it back, right? Again, let's look at the map again, because every time I talk about this, I just want to remind ourselves what's at stake here is that this region asked Russia to come in and help them stop being terrorized by the Ukrainian army. Russia did that. Now Russia's in control of the red parts, and the West is sending people to die to push Russia back all of that territory. Should anyone die for this? Well, the West thinks the answer is yes. But what about the climate junkies? Do they think the environment should die for this? It's really hard to get an estimate on the climate impact of military equipment because the components of military equipment is secret for top secret reasons. Like you can't say like, oh, how do I make a tank or whatever? You can't just get it on the internet. But in the U.S., it's estimated that the military alone of the U.S. has a higher carbon footprint than all of Portugal. Or all of Denmark, either one of those. And by some calculations, all of the world's militaries combined have a higher carbon footprint than Russia. Take a look at this. I mean, the highest emitters right now are China, the United States, and India. But militaries, if they were a country, would be the highest emitters, have the highest carbon footprint of all other places, more than Russia. That's significant, given the land mass of Russia, right? And yet world governments are going after cows. Like, do you think that world leaders will address this in their climate policy? Like, no, we got to go after the cows, the wars we need to have, right?
Right. We've got to get rid of cow farts. But, you know, all those Abrams tanks with the depleted uranium shells that give people cancer for years to come? Keep making those. Keep cranking those out. General Dynamics or whoever the hell makes these things. Raytheon, keep making your Patriot missiles.
Yeah. Like today I was reading that I think that some of the Humvees or something get like 4 miles to the gallon or something. Like they are gas guzzlers.
Well, isn't that the old story about Jeep, right? Philip, you might know this better. David, do you have a Jeep? Don't like the original Jeeps from back in the day. They got horrible gas mileage, I think. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But tanks are awful.
Yeah,
Humvees are the worst. They made fun of Arnold Schwarzenegger for having a Humvee because it gets like 4 miles to the gallon. Yeah.
Were you going to say something, Philip?
I think David was just agreeing with me, and
I wasn't.
Yeah, I was just agreeing.
On a night like this, I'll take it.
All right. Well, do you think that world leaders will address this in their climate policy? They will not. And here is a summary from a publication called War Horse. The reason that they will not is because in 1997, the Kyoto Protocol, which was the world's first legally binding international climate treaty, created a reporting loophole for militaries. It exempts them from greenhouse gas emissions and reporting them during military operations. So that's interesting, right? Everyone has to take responsibility for their climate impact, except world militaries. And in 2015, the Paris Accords did away with this exemptions, but they didn't replace it either. So right now, as it stands, the decision of whether to report military emissions and how to calculate them is left up to individual countries. So do you think that any individual country is going to say, yeah, I'll tell you what the carbon footprint is of our missions and our military? No. The U.S. does sort of report emissions to the United Nations, but in a non-specified category. So that doesn't really help us. So again, we see governments getting a pass where people do not. And that, I think, just causes this misguided anxiety about the environment. And it causes people to do these sort of gimmicky things, such as in Montana this week, a trial has begun with these young people who are suing the state because they claim that the state is not providing them with a clean environment. They claim that the state has prioritized big business over the environment. The plaintiffs are a group of these children between the ages of 2 and 18. The judge has already ruled that what is at stake would not change the state's approach to climate change. All they are in here to win is what's called a declaratory judgment, stating that officials have violated the state constitution. So while it would give other cases a strong precedent, it would not change these young people's futures. It will not change what the government's doing. It will not change the government's and the state's climate emission policy. It will just sort of set these young people out as a gimmick, using them to pretend we care about the climate while ignoring all of these, you know, uranium possibilities, nuclear possibilities that are actually an existential threat to the climate.
And the next step, of course, like if you want to go down that rabbit hole, is we've said all along, Biden said, we're not going to send tanks to Ukraine.
Yeah.
We're sending tanks to Ukraine. They're there. They're being blown up. We're not going to send men there. They are there. We're not going to send artillery. We're not going to send Patriot missile systems. All of these things have been aligned. We've sent them. Mm-hmm. We're not going to send depleted uranium shells. We have. We're not going to send F-16s. We have. And now, what's next? Nuclear weapons, right?
Yeah.
Some sort of nuclear weapons that are positioned in, you know, close by or nearby. Like, that's the next step, guys.
Yeah.
Like, and so, where's the outrage from people like Greta Thunberg and these climate, these climate fear mongers.
Yes, this is exactly the point is, you know, okay, that's great. You spoke out about the dam. It is an ecocide. So then what about the bombs? Yeah. What about the uranium? What about the radiation? What about the climate change of a war, right? You can't have it both ways. You can't support war and then lecture me about, like, I do have some friends that have like Ukrainian flag in their bio and then like, you know, send all these, like, let's take this workshop of like how to the environment. And I'm
like, these friends, can you name names?
No, I'm not going to. Like, do you see the contradiction?
Because we're having a party this weekend. I hope none of them are coming.
And to be fair, we really don't know that any of it has made it to Ukraine. So maybe there is truth in what he's saying. Like, we're not going to send weapons there. We're just going to send them out into the ether and hope they end up, you know,
well, we know
in Mexico. Yeah, Mexico.
That the depleted uranium stock, I believe this was reported recently from the UK, was blown up by Russia before they could use it.
Yeah.
In drone strikes. So that's not great.
From the UK. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For the environment. So we know that some of that damage has been done.
And Russia confirmed it. Russia confirmed and said, we hit the depleted uranium shell stockpiles from the UK.
Yes.
And they said, because we hit them, though, the way in which they're hit, they're not incendiary enough to then be evaporated into the atmosphere. So that's good. Okay. I'll take Russia's word on that they didn't evaporate into atmosphere.
Okay. I don't understand it enough to know that that's fine. Yeah. You know,
Philip, well, though, has. Yeah,
go ahead. Yeah, I had a revelation, actually, that this segment you just did. I have solved the Dutch farmer crisis. Like, for any Dutch farmers listening, put armor on your cows, weaponize your cows, call them battle cattle, and then you no longer have to declare the emissions from the cows because then they are military.
Right. Put like jousting rods on the side, right, or javelins or whatever, or like we do with dolphins. We put missiles on dolphins and just, you know, send them into battle.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ukraine could start using them instead.
And then you're exempt.
Yeah, and then
it's the Calvary. Get it? The Calvary.
You really moved me with that joke. Lord. Yeah, really like that. All right. Let us know your thoughts on that in the comments below. You're not afraid to leave comments. I love that. So thanks for leaving comments. Hey, we've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about people going topless at the White House. A bunch of trans rights activists showed up at the White House and took their tops off. Is that right? Is that okay? And also, Biden replaced the American flags with some other stuff. We'll tell you what that's all about. But first, oh my gosh, you see what's going on in the economy right now? And we are in for some deep, deep doo-doo as it comes to the U.S. dollar. We could be looking at a 3 to 5 year U.S. dollar bear market, total in the dumps. And where is your retirement money right now? Do you have money sitting in a U.S. savings account? Please be careful with that. Please be careful. What Natalie and I do is invest in gold and silver and precious metals and real estate. And one of the ways that you can actually invest your old 401k or your old IRA is to roll it over into a precious metals IRA. And that's what our friends at Lear Capital can do. They can help you get set up with that so that you can invest in precious metals inside of your self-directed account so the government doesn't control it, you do. This is the power of a self-directed account. Most people have no idea what a self-directed account is. Because if you call up Fidelity on the phone or you call up TD Ameritrade, you call up any of these big brokerages or these big, you know, banks, hey, do you guys do self-directed accounts? They'll say, no, we don't. They don't do that. So you have total checkbook control of your finances. So if you want to take $1,000 and put it into gold or silver as a way to protect your wealth against inflation and the decline of the U.S. dollar, look into it. And all you need to do is just get on the phone with them and see if it's a fit for you. They'll send you a free gold kit. Sit down, talk it over with your family. And if you want to invest, you can have it stored off-site or at your house. You can get gold coins sent to you, or you can have it stored in storage. There's different locations, of course, that will store it for you and, you know, 24-hour protection for your precious metals. If you're interested in investing in gold, Lear can help you get started today with your precious metals part and converting part of your IRA and 401k into gold and silver IRA. Call Lear Capital today at 1-800-613-3557 or go to the website learredacted.com. But I just recommend getting on the phone with them. Talk to them. Let them know your situation, and they can walk you through the different prices of gold right now and where, you know, where do they see this going? Also, how they can help you convert your 401k, an old 401k that's been sitting there for years after you left a company and you don't know what to do with it, or an old IRA. I had an old IRA when I left my news anchor job in Philadelphia many, many moons ago. I had like 21,000 sitting in an old 401k, and it was sitting there for like 5 years. Remember that? And then we rolled it over into a self-directed account. Anyway, call them today, 1-800-613-3557, or go to learredacted.com.
All right. Well, the White House has banned a transgender person after they went topless on the White House lawn at a pride event over the weekend. The White House says that this person cannot come to any future events and that what they did was inappropriate and disrespectful. This is interesting. We did not think the White House would speak out about this, but it was. I'm going to show you some of it. We're going to blur it. Definitely not appropriate for being in the White House. But I wonder, does this mean that maybe now we can talk about Ezra Miller's behavior? Now that we can talk about transgender people in a critical way and treat them like human beings?
I hope so.
Instead of only activists? We're going to get to that. So here's the story. The Biden administration is taking flack for a big gay pride event over the weekend. Now here's how the White House was decorated for the event. And here is a still image of some transgender influencers partying at that event. The person in the middle that is the only one that was punished, as far as we know, it's biological male that goes by the name of Rose Montoya. So first about the flag. This is something that means a lot of things to a lot of people, obviously, the American flag. It's a symbol of whatever it is that you value about America. This is why we have a law about how you are allowed to display that flag. It's called the U.S. National Flag Code. It became law in 1942. Here's from the Department of Defense website says that when displaying the U.S. flag with other flags, the U.S. flag comes first and is centered in the middle of a flag on display. In addition, the U.S. flag must be placed higher than other flags unless other national flags are present. In that case, the U.S. flag will be the same height. Well, obviously, this is a violation of that rule. Take a look again at how the U.S. flag, again, it's not supposed to flank other flags, and it must be flown higher.
Yeah, not the most prominent one above the podium is now this flag instead of the United States flag.
Yes.
And by the way, on Veterans Day, you'll notice on Veterans Day, there were no flags hung. Mm-hmm. Think about that for a second. So Pride Day, this whole big Pride event, they can hang up all these flags and put up a gay Pride flag. But on Veterans Day, nothing.
And you notice the, if we could just leave the image up a little bit longer, they used the LGB flag that has been co-opted by gender ideology. It used to be just a rainbow, but in the last few years, this baby shower colors of pink and blue to symbolize gender ideology are sort of invading the flag.
It does. It looks like it's, well, the chevron there at the top, right? Right in the middle, yes, is that chevron that's now, it's like sticking in there. It's the trans chevron.
I do think it's an accurate description of how, yeah, trans rights have sort of usurped, mm-hmm, actual gay rights, because they are conflicting things. We've talked about this many times.
But also at the heart of it, just think about the rainbow has been co-opted. Like, I see a big movement online. They're saying, take back the rainbow. Take back the rainbow as
for
well.
For Skittles?
I don't know. I mean, a rainbow is a rainbow. Like, you know, it's caused by the prism of light, light hitting a prism of water vapor particles after, you know, a rainstorm, the way it hits, right? I don't know exact science behind it. My 4-year-old
Roy
could probably.
Roy G. Bibb is
the refraction. Refraction.
Refraction.
Light.
Yes, the refraction of light. Yeah, they might be giant song. Roy G. Bibb is a colorful. Anyway, take back the rainbow.
Okay. Yes. So, you know, if we want to do this with our American flag, we have to change the law. We have to agree that we don't think this law is okay anymore, and we should agree on that, right? We should not just violate the law when it comes to the flag law. This is not a decision that just should be changed because we feel like it. Now let's talk about the boobs. It is legal to go topless in Washington, D.C., but here is the video with blurred boobs that went viral of toplessness. I want to say probably one of the first times toplessness on the White House lawn. I'd have to do a little history digging on that, but watch anyway.
Clinton.
Welcome to the White House.
Thank you.
Happy Pride Month. Happy Pride Year. Happy Pride Life.
Yeah.
Transgender children.
You are beautiful.
You are heard.
You belong.
You're understood.
You are loved.
And you belong. Yeah. Some of the bravest and most inspiring people I've ever known.
I mean, you're welcome.
Good folks.
Can we take a little video? Hi, Mr. President. It is an honor. Trans rights are human rights. Oh, it's a video.
Oh, it's a video.
Gorgeous
Gucci. The monument's in the right?
Gay news.
It's so damn.
Are we topless at the White House?
All right. So, you know, they went on to post a rebuttal to this, Rose Montoya, and we're going to look at that in a second, you know, saying that this is legal because it is legal to be topless in Washington, D.C., but sexual acts are not allowed in Washington, D.C. I would also say it's interesting that Montoya is the only one being punished here, because the two people that were flanking Montoya were trans-identified biological females who had surgically removed their breasts and were showing off their scars. And also, I can't think of a better word for this. It's super uncomfortable. They were jiggling their own boobs. They were getting jiggy with it. They were fondling themselves, right? Mm-hmm. So why only the why only the one that has prosthetic boobs gets punished, when the other ones who had removed their prosthetic removed their full boobs, mm-hmm, but still were fondling and jiggling and topless, why only punish one thing? Can you think of any rationale behind this.
No, but this is something that I've been grappling with for a long time. And I think when I was thinking about it, I just this is a great discussion. This is the kind of something I can really sink my teeth into.
I suppose, but I do think that it's equally inappropriate. I am just as upset about the absent boobs, I guess we're going to call them, the cut-off boob fondling, as I am about the prosthetic boob fondling.
Well, do you remember that New York City protest a few months ago?
Yeah.
I know Philip does because he has to blur that stuff for us. So he has a memory bank of like blurred boob memory bank that he's got to go through in his Rolodex. And there were biological women, right? There were biological men who...
Yeah, who were like also fondling and jiggling.
And they were naked. And like the local news blurred that out. And then the other one they did, and it was like a weird, like, well, what do we blur? Because if they're biological male, but then they just get okay, now they've got these big fake ones. But if it's a biological woman and they've cut them off, we should be now they're pretending that they're a man.
So is it appropriate to be fondling your boobs of any gender on the White House lawn? I think is an appropriate question.
I mean, if Hunter Biden is there or it's part of the Clinton administration, probably. I mean, that's probably.
Okay, I brought along this picture to show you because this was when I interviewed Joe Biden in the White House in 2014, I believe it was, 2013. And I was so upset that I had forgot to pack pantyhose, these nylons that I'm wearing there, that I ran to CVS before this because I was like, I cannot be in the White House with bare legs. That's super inappropriate. And so I ran out because I had just packed in a rush because I couldn't find my pantyhose and I bought them. So I guess I need not have bothered because I had this idea that decorum was really appropriate in the nation's capital. I guess that maybe is not the case.
No, apparently
anymore.
You could have gone topless.
I guess I didn't even need to, go topless. Now, here's a statement from the White House that came along just a few hours ago. They said this behavior is inappropriate and disrespectful for any event at the White House. It is not reflective of the event we hosted to celebrate LGBTQI+ families or other hundreds of guests who were in attendance. Individuals in this video will not be invited to future events. So it does seem like it's not just Rose Montoya, but the others as well, who were also fondling non-breasts, the amputated breasts, I guess.
Yeah.
You shouldn't fondle your amputated breasts or your prosthetic breasts.
That's what I've always said.
Right. Now, here is how Montoya responded to this controversy about the topless video, saying that this just shows that I am a real woman. Watch.
And I fully support the movement in freeing the nipple because why is my chest now deemed inappropriate or illegal when I show it off? However, before coming out as trans, it was not. All you're doing is affirming that I am a woman. All you're doing is saying that trans women are women because for some reason, people like to sexualize women's bodies and say that they are inappropriate. My trans masculine friends were showing off their top surgery scars and living in joy, and I wanted to join them. And because it is perfectly within the law in Washington, D.C., I decided to join them and cover my nipples just to play it safe.
Okay. As a real woman, I just want to say it is not safe to pull your boobs out in public.
Especially in Washington, D.C.
This is something most women know.
Crime capital, like one of the crime capitals.
Yeah. Let me just say this, to any young girls or people who are new to womanhood, that's not safe.
And where in that person's brain do they think it's okay to go to a White House event where the vetting process to strip naked? Like who thinks to do that? What's going through your messed up brain that you think that that's appropriate?
I don't know. I mean, again, Montoya is saying I saw trans masculine people who had like pulled off their shirt and said, look at my amputations, right? And so they thought, that looks fun. Let me show you my prosthesis. Like it's like a yin and yang, I suppose.
Someone says in the chat, mental illness should be treated, not glorified, Steve Green says, not glorified.
Well, that's interesting. And so this had me thinking about the whole Ezra Miller bit, because this week the Flash movie comes out and Ezra Miller has been kept out of all press around the Flash. He can't go on the late night talk shows. He can't go on Howard Stern. He's not allowed to really talk to anybody because he has done some really, truly questionable things as of late. And so here is how the premiere of The Flash went yesterday. Ezra Miller does identify as non-binary, but Variety covered The Flash premiere last night, which had Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck and all of the other Flash stars. But this is the first time they've let him out, kind of like a dog in a cage. Take a look at how they have spun it. Like, here's a list of all of the things that he's done just in the last 2 or 3 years, like a felony burglary. He's been accused of grooming young kids. He was choking someone outside a bar. He freaked out at a cop in Hawaii who was trying to arrest him, and the cop apologized because he said he used the wrong pronouns. That's been a lot. So you can imagine him going on like Jimmy Fallon to talk about the movie. It'd be very disingenuous to be like, how have things been lately? Right. And not ask
Jimmy Fallon would do that. He would not ask a tough question. So that Jimmy Fallon would be the best place for him to go.
True.
He'd have him do like a singing skit with him or something. You know, they do like a little singing song.
Well, yeah. Or he would just try and see if he could run faster than the Flash. He would do something really stupid like that. Yeah.
That's why all of the marketing has been around Batman and Michael Keaton.
Well, take a look at what Variety reports here is that like the studio announced ahead of time that Miller would not be let out, basically, that the Los Angeles premiere would be Miller's lone publicity commitment for the film. They did let him walk the red carpet, but he couldn't stand for traditional on-camera and print interviews. You know, when like you walk up and you're like, "What are you wearing tonight?" Like, yeah. None of that is like a caged dog cannot be let out. So it's interesting now that you know that makes it awkward for everybody having one person on a tight leash that's the star of the film, and they just decided they're gonna still go with this. You know, it's an interesting contradiction. Like, we can't talk critically about people who are transgendered because we want to show support for them. Does that help anybody to sort of coddle them like that and mm-hmm. not talk about the real issues around them? Meanwhile, like Johnny Depp for his divorce trial, you know, lost Pirates of the Caribbean. They say maybe they'll put him back in that role. We're not sure. It's just this contradiction of like what we can talk about and what we can't. Most of the time, the sort of leftist media and politicians are trying not to be critical of anyone who is even remotely associated with gender ideology. So for these White House topless flashers to be punished is maybe a step.
Yeah, a slight step. But they still invited them and did all of the vetting before they invited them. They know who these TikTok influencers are. They know the type of content they post on their TikTok channel. So were they shocked that they suddenly decided to strip down on the White House lawn and be controversial? And of course, they're going to get millions more TikTok followers now, and they're going to get, you know, because they acted like this.
Actually, I mean, I do see a lot of the comments around Rose Montoya's Instagram and things are saying like, you set us back. You make us all look like perverts. This is not representative of what we're out here for. So there does seem to be a legitimate backlash. You know, people who don't want to be seen as groomers and perverts and want to be respected as humans, you know, actually don't stand for this. And it's a nice reminder to all of us because sometimes it feels like they do.
Someone in the chat says, Johnny Depp, I'm sure, told Disney where to stick it. I don't know. We'll see. He said it was really upsetting that they sort of, you know, I don't know, pushed him aside. But now there's like they're considering that they might bring him back. And maybe he will say shove it.
I mean, he said that as part of his divorce trial. You know, to make it seem like he had really lost something because of that turmoil. So whether that's true or not, I don't know.
I mean, they rebuilt the parks. The Pirates of the Caribbean rides have Johnny Depp in the ride physically, animatronically. They built it around him at the parks, you know, at Disney World and Disneyland. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Interesting. Well, let us know what you think of this story in the comments below.
You've not been afraid to tell us what you think about tonight's stories, and I love that. So thank you guys so much for being a part of our great community here.
Yeah.
Any sort of postmortems on any of the stories we covered today, guys? Anyone want to let us know?
You want to go another round?
Yeah, you guys want to go? No, I just want to say to all of the new subscribers we have today, thank you guys so much for subscribing. Really pushing close to 2 million subscribers here. So thank you on YouTube specifically. We're getting very, very close. That's really awesome. And I'm really excited about that. So thank you guys for subscribing. And it's very easy to do. And also on Rumble, we're getting close to 350,000 followers on Rumble. And again, it's free. You can free to sign up and subscribe on Rumble and on YouTube as well. I'll tell you something that's not free is our redacted community. So we are user supported. We're community supported. If you go to redacted.inc, right there on the right side of your screen, become a VIP member today, click join. And for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support independent journalism. We've got a special guest joining us later in the week for a redacted conversation episode, which will be released to you first, to our redacted community. Again, totally free, redacted live streams that are just for community members. It's our way of saying thank you for supporting independent journalism. And again, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support this show. We are not funded by George Soros or anybody like that. So it's just us here. So
maybe you're not.
Yeah, you've been. Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations. You're now funded by, are you funded by Raytheon? George Soros?
No, George Soros. George. He sends me about $20 every 6 months.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
It's not the George Soros, just the another
probably
George
not.
Soros.
It's just some guy named George Soros. An envelope shows up every 6 months with $20 in it and says from George. So I'm assuming it's him.
It's the guy that pays you for gardening. You mowed
your client.
You're so kind that you mowed George Soros's lawn and he pays you $20. Much love to all of you guys. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time is when we do this show live. Have a great night, everyone. Bye.